welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower, and we have another great show dealing with metaphysics, spirituality, science, and associated subjects, and other things as well. And tonight I thought that it would be interesting to talk about the afterlife in a little different way than I ever have before, and especially about those parts of the astral world, which is the afterlife immediately following this life, that most people are going to go to. Now, most, what number is that? Well, let's say 75% of the people in countries that are fairly developed and people who are fairly fairly advanced in their soul development. Fairly advanced just means that they've lived at least probably half of their number of lifetimes that they're going to go through while they're in physical incarnation. And so this is kind of the show to think about where most folks are going to be. It doesn't mean it's going to be where you're going to be, but I'll tell you that the places that are we're not going to go into much detail about tonight are the least developed folks are going to end up in, and some of the very advanced ones. But those two sides of the, we'll say, the curve are they're only 25% total, about, give or take, of the total population of, as I said, the more developed countries, the people who usually have more developed souls. There is no such thing now as a person by country or by exact location defining who or what they are in terms of their soul development, because some very advanced souls go to very primitive places to bring some light in. And it's a tough for them. It's a real tough thing for them to do, so not very many do that. That's why we can exclude them to some extent. And in terms of evil and darkness, in this world right now, there are some places that are much darker than others, but evil is an equal opportunity type of life script if someone wants to choose it. And so you can find evil people even in the most pristine, so to speak, developed societies, pristine only in the sense that it seems so. They shouldn't have evil running around, but they do. Believe me, they do. So we can't make any assumptions about either of those other than making averages, which is what I said to begin with. Okay, so what do I mean by astral life after death? Well, of course, if you've been listening to the show, you already know the answer to that. But some people don't, so that's okay. They haven't listened, or maybe they never understood it before. Astral life is the life after physical death that people move into because they have lost their physical body along with their physical senses, because that's called death, right? That body's gone. And they live in full consciousness in their emotional or astral body. Now you can say, well, does that body exist while we're physically alive? Oh, sure. We have astral senses. That's why we have emotions. We can feel. But, here's the caveat. Most of our consciousness is focused in our physical body and not our astral, so the senses are subconscious to us, and it's hard for us to even define them. When you say, how do you feel? Some women are better at this than men are usually, but how do you feel? Most people can express things in a very general sense, but they can't express their feelings of astral touch, astral hearing, astral sight, astral taste, astral smell, and their two senses of God astrally. They can't specifically usually tell you what those are or how they're functioning. And when you talk about the five lower senses, the first five I named, most people can't really describe very clearly what it feels like to have empathy, except, well, it's kind of like knowing how someone else feels. But you really can't explain it in much more detail than that, because we're not fully conscious of those senses, and our explanations are vague, because our sense of them is vague. We have the senses, but our sense of the sense is vague. Okay. Now, the sense of empathy can be a bit stronger in people who are fairly good at empathy. And they might be able to actually describe the sense itself better than the constituent parts of that sense. That's not unusual. So in other words, some people can say, well, I can tell you how empathy feels, but I can't tell you what astral sight is like. Yeah, because they don't. They don't know what that is. But that's actually part of it, but they can't put it together for themselves. So that's okay. That's all right, because you get those senses fully enlivened through your consciousness being focused in the body after your physical death. A thing called the life thread, that's a kind of a colloquial term, the life thread, is broken when you die from your physical body. And the consciousness thread is moved from the physical senses in its all its glory, you can say, while you're physically alive, to briefly the etheric part of the physical senses, and then very quickly to the astral senses. And once it's in the astral body, it just remains there because the etheric and physical bodies are gone. Once you leave the etheric plane, no more sense from that plane other than the part that you fused through great deeds of virtue. Now, if you live a life of virtue, you actually retain some of your physical senses inside your astral senses, and you can recreate that sensation. Wow, and you can even use it sometimes to sense some things in the physical world even after you're gone. Didn't know that? Okay, well, that's all right. Now you do. But that's for people who are enlightening the senses. Now, if you extrapolate that whole process, just as a little, I'll say, a little aside, if you extrapolate that process, and if you were to continue with the idea that your senses, as they join together, you retain all of the elements of them, no matter what sub-world or what world, being plane of reality, you are actually in consciousness on or focused on or living on, you would conclude that someone who is able to join all of that together in an enlightened way, which you call a master, or master of the ageless wisdom, or there's a number of other words for them, the enlightened ones, you could sense things in all three, eventually, of the lower worlds, the mental, the astral, and the physical, at any time, no matter where you were, in any of those worlds, or even in a world such as the Buddhic world, above those worlds, you could still sense what's going on and still would understand and know everything. And that would be pretty cool. So you don't have to be somewhere as long as your senses work there. And in the astral world, which kind of is a nice segue now, in the astral world, our senses are capable because of a thing called dimensional addition. There's more dimensions. We can sense things very far away from where our body, our astral body, actually is located. So if you were to try to make this sort of as a correspondence to the physical world, if we were in the astral world and our physical senses were working just like they were, it would be like you could be in your house listening to me while you're sensing what's going on in your neighbor's house, or maybe 100 miles away, or maybe 1,000 miles away, or maybe even as far as the other side of the planet. That's a pretty cool thing, too. As you get more distant, it becomes more sketchy and less definitive. But nonetheless, your senses do move that way, and you're able to do it, provided you could imagine in your thought what things are like where you're trying to sense from. You have to have some creative imagination going there, and you have to have been there, which is not so easy for people, because they haven't been all places all the time, so they can't necessarily sense everything that's going on if they've never been to a place and they've never gotten someone else's creative imagination about that place. Then no, they aren't going to be able to extend their senses there if they're in the astral world. But since a lot of times they can sense or can creatively imagine it because they have been there or gotten it from someone else, they actually can extend their senses. Now, the accuracy of their sense is only as good as their perception was in their imagination from their first experience or from what they picked up from others, and you can see how this eventually gets to the point where you don't have the very best accurate information. But nonetheless, you still can do things you can't do in the physical world. The extension of sense is a pretty remarkable ability. And people in the astral world, because of it, are more informed and have greater consciousness or understanding about what's going on around them, because they can sense things at such a great distance from themselves. And they can also communicate with other people, because sense and communication are kind of connected, we'll say. And so they can communicate over vast distances without using, you know, cell phones and that sort of stuff. So they're capable of doing things that we are not, because the physics is different. Now, just briefly, I always like to go into the science part. What's so different about the physics? Well, the first thing is that a thing called the quantum constant is thousands of times greater. Now, you might say, what? What's that? Okay. Well, the quantum constant really in the physical world only affects subatomic particles. It virtually has zero effect on anything other than the smallest of the small of the small kinds of things around us. Now, these particles make up everything. So once in a while, the quantum constant gets a little goofy, and it does have an effect on things, but it's very, very odd when it happens. Certain kinds of super waves in the ocean are affected this way. There's an equation called the Schrödinger equation that you can actually determine how often it's going to happen, which is, you know, there's a zillion waves and once in a zillion times or whatever. One of those waves is going to do something very strange because of the quantum constant is changing for that wave, and molecules are aligning in a certain way, and their wave actions are moving in a direction together, and all kinds of weird things are happening. Okay. So that doesn't happen too often here. That's like a very rare event. But in the astral world, there's a couple of things that change. First of all, the density of energy. Oh, man, talk about lacking density. Electromagnetic energy is still part of the physical world. Well, you know how lacking energy or density that is. It goes right through us, right? Radio, television waves, X-rays, all that stuff goes right through us. And amazingly, astral energy is hundreds of times to a thousand or more times less dense than the etheric energy or electromagnetic. So it really lacks density. Well, when things don't have density anymore, then the surrounding thought has a great effect on the energy, because energy has thought, if you want to call it that, which we call gravity, to begin with. It also has a more intelligent kind of thinking, but for the most part, most energy is just gravitational energy, and it just affects itself. It likes to get bigger and more dense. But there's so little density to the energy that gravity, for all intents and purposes, virtually doesn't exist in the astral world as we understand it. And what does exist there is the energy follows thought extremely closely, where energy in our world seems to never follow our thought anyway, because it's so gravitational that it has its own thought, we'll call it gravity, so strong that we can't overcome it. That's why you can't say, gee, I'd like to float up to the moon. And you don't float up there because you're thinking it. But if you did it in the astral world, you might be floating pretty high. You know, maybe not to the moon, but you might go pretty far. So the point is that this is a remarkable change in the way that things are. And this is all throughout the astral world. I'm generalizing here. It's more extreme as you go to higher subworlds. But even in the lowest, there's much of this reality that we're talking about. Then you have to add something else if you're going to do equations about this. And that is that the dimensionality changes. We say there are three dimensions of time, three dimensions of space in our world. They are height, width, and depth, right? Most people are familiar with those three dimensions. In the astral world, you not only have those three, by the way, which physicists these days call one, but we'll call it three. It's all right. For our purposes, it's close enough. But there's a fourth dimension besides time now. I know a lot of people think the fourth dimension is time, but you've got to put the astral dimension in before you really get to time. And that fourth dimension is the direction or vector of energy itself. So energy is flowing in a specific direction, and that specific direction gives another dimension to the energy. Now, what does that mean? Well, it's kind of like, think of it like this. You got a square box in your hand, and if you push it south, it stays square. But if you go north, it becomes a rectangle. And if you go east, it becomes a triangle. And if you go west, it becomes a circle. I'm just making this up, of course. And you say, what? what is that? Well, what are you talking about? Well, what I'm telling you is that the direction of energy is based, to some extent, on how it's moving. But now I have to tell you a little secret. It isn't exactly like I just described, because I made that so simple so that you can follow it. But it's more about the feeling, because astral is different than where we are. Everything's about feeling behind the energy that changes it to either a circle or a square or a rectangle. And that feeling is whether it is selfish or loving, whether it is giving or taking. Now, there are varying levels and kinds of those, so there's varying levels and kinds of directions to the energy. So it's more based upon those astral characteristics of feeling and emotion than it is based upon what we call physicalness, because the physicalness is something that's going in the astral world. So astral energy takes on this new component that has to do with its direction, and that changes further this thing called the quantum constant, which is the amount that energy is controlled by thought, and or, that's one way to look at it, the amount that energy is going to be probabilistically doing something. In other words, it's a probabilistic factor that energy is going to move this way or that way in the physical world. But in the astral world, that all changes, because the quantum constant is thousands of times greater, and so things can be happening all over the place, virtually and sometimes exactly at the same time. Now let's get to time, since we're talking about physics, and I kind of like physics. Okay, what about time? What's going on there? Well, in the physical world, time is crunched, literally, by the density factor, and by the fact that the quantum constant is extremely small, and therefore the probability of energy is extremely low that it's going to be doing something other than what we would normally think it of as doing, except at the very, very lowest and smallest levels where the quantum constant has more of an effect. So ultimately, when we look at this system, time itself becomes a product of the amount that energy is unchangeable. That's called inertia. And inertia has such an effect on time because it takes much, much longer to do something, because human beings, who are one of the life forms that actually can understand time to some small extent, are doing a lot of things that are mistakes. Mistakes separate time from space and causes time to be used up to achieve any activity. Now, lower life forms do the same thing, but they do it on a much less, we'll say, creative level. So they don't take the same kinds of levels of time to do some things in relationship to their overall time model. Their time model is how long they take to metabolize, how long they take to live in general. Trees grow slowly, but they actually make fewer mistakes than human beings. So in their time reality, they don't waste as much time as humans do. Humans waste huge amounts of time because we're so selfish, we do so many things in our illusion, we're separating a lot of time from space, and therefore we use up a lot of time unnecessarily in carrying out our activities. Now you could say, well, what does that mean in terms of what time is doing? Well, time isn't really what you think it is. Time is a measure of this condition of consciousness. It's how conscious the average of all life is around it that determines how much time it takes to do anything. So if we were amazingly conscious, we would take virtually no time in which to think or create or to do things, ultimately. So the same is true in the astral world. The only difference, or the major difference, is that time is dilated in the astral world. What does that mean? Well, again, you got this very strange effect in density of energy. And when you cut down the gravity to almost nothing, time becomes, you have a lot more time in which to do whatever you're going to do, because everything around you is at a higher frequency, and much lower levels of gravity. When that condition takes place, you have a thing called time dilation, and people live in this this kind of expanded realm of time, meaning that to us, to them, in the astral world, we are moving like extremely slow. So slow, we're almost imperceptibly moving to some. And they're moving extremely quickly. And you might say, oh, I'm confused. If they're moving quickly, aren't they faster, using up time faster? No. The quicker they move, the more time of our time that they have to do something in. You see that? So if they're extremely fast, then it takes them much less time in our time to do something. That's called dilation. They just get they get a lot more time of our time in relationship to their time to do something. Whoa, isn't that cool? So people who live in the astral world go there for about 30 to 50 years. Some only stay a year, and others may stay 7 years. But that's rare, extremely rare, actually. 30 to 50 is the average. 40 is probably right in the center and about exactly average what people live there. But those 40 years in the astral world can be anywhere from 3 times to 24 times, and these are approximate numbers, greater. So if you think 40 times 24, well, okay, that's 720 years in astral time. Someone lives there if they've lived 40 of our years here. Well, yeah, 720. And then if you go up to the full 50 years, which is the higher end of the average, you can get up to like 960 years. Wow. To those people who are living in the astral world, which is going to be all of us in the not-too-distant future. I know, you might say, well, I'm only 32 years old. Well, okay, let's say you live to 96, 3 times your age right now. If you live to 96, that's another 64 years. But when you go to the astral world, you'll probably live there for 400 or 500 years. Wow. So life is very long in the astral world in comparison to the lifetime here for the average person. And we'll talk about some of that in the three, mostly I'm going to focus on three of the astral subworlds in tonight's show. But I'm getting into some of I like to define stuff and some of the definitive and scientific understandings first. Now, you might say, well, this is getting really far out there. I mean, how much are we going into that metaphysics and physics stuff? Well, just a little bit more, and then I'll get into some of the fun things about examples and all that stuff. So don't worry. Yeah, we're getting there. All right. So here we are. We're talking about what the astral world is like in time, but also in terms of people's life experiences. Not only is a person capable of living vast amounts of time in comparison to their physical life, but they also have the ability, if they so choose to take it, to be far more creative. Now, why is that? Well, while they can't make anything out of physical energy, making things out of astral energy is much easier and much faster. And you can experiment and do all kinds of things that you couldn't do when you're physically alive very easily. And your experience spiritually is higher. Your consciousness is generally higher than it was while you're physically alive in a relative sense. It doesn't mean you don't become, you know, you're not going to become Gandhi or Mother Teresa or, you know, Jesus-like because you're living in the astral world. But you may become so much more loving and giving that you might be way beyond what you ever did while you were physically alive. That has a bearing on a lot. Now, you might ask, well, how come someone becomes like that? Well, because consciousness grows because the surrounding world itself, the entire world around the person, is easier to grasp and understand because of the senses being able to be projected, as I talked about at the beginning of the show. And because people are so much better in communication, and because people can move about the astral world, just not in a physical, but, you know, like a physical sense, move about incredibly easily. You can literally fly from one place to another, and that's not the fastest way to get somewhere. If you've been there before, and you have pretty good creative imagination, you can picture the place, and if it's accurate enough, you can literally recreate all of the astral molecules in your body over to the other place. And there you go. You're there in seconds instead of minutes, hours of flight. And, of course, if you want to, you can still walk. Walking is allowed, and so is running. But a lot of people kind of float around and fly around. And how fast can you fly? Fairly quickly. There's very little in terms of astral resistance, in terms of what we would consider to be atmosphere and wind, because everything is such low density. And people barely breathe there, which is a whole other thing. So ultimately, the flight thing is at enormous speeds, literally hundreds to 1,000 miles per hour or even greater, depending upon where you are and your level of consciousness. That's flight. And even at that speed, you still can get there a lot faster if you recreate yourself. Now, recreation takes a lot of astral thought, which is creative imagination, and a lot of sense. So if your senses are a little disheveled because you've been selfish, you may have trouble getting to where you want to go, or when you get there, you might be extremely tired and fatigued. You could even fall asleep. So it's not that easy for some people to get around through the fastest means, but compared to here, it's way easier. Well, when you have better communication, better transportation, extremely good and accurate senses in comparison to where people are when they die from the physical world, and a whole bunch of other factors, including that you overcome the fear of death, the great illusion. Because you know, well, I thought I was going to die, but I'm in the astral world, and things aren't so bad, and now I'm not so afraid of dying, because there's probably someplace else that's going to, maybe consciousness never dies and people start losing some of their fear of death. That causes, all those conditions together, cause a person to become amazingly more conscious, which means amazingly more understanding and loving. They're more inclusive. It's just an automatic thing. It's like God's grace. As soon as you get there, boom, bingo, there you are, you're more conscious. I can say, well, aren't there places where people that were real selfish to go? Yeah, sure. But they're still a little more conscious than they were when they were physically alive. Now, if they were evil son of a guns, it's not going to make a big difference because they reject any advancement in consciousness and were converted to some way of being evil and more powerful over others. So ultimately, they don't really gain much. But the rest of the folks, they do. So we're going to see how that affects life for the majority of people who go to the astral world. That's a very interesting part of the subject. Okay, so let's get into some examples. I know I've talked enough about all the science stuff, and I can get people kind of twisted around, and okay, that's enough. I've had enough of that. Okay, so, you know, someday maybe we'll have a couple shows, just the whole show is about the science, you know. But I know. That's probably going to be the ones that some people just say, enough of this guy, I'm going to go listen to somebody talk about auras or something. All right, so here we go. what is astral life like for the majority of people? That's what the show is about, right? Most people's astral life after death. Most people go to one of three subworlds. I'm going to name them for you. I call them, and a lot of people also there even call them, the fifth subworld, the fourth subworld, or the third subworld. Those subworlds are the subworlds of, we'll say, way over the majority, 75% or more, of humanity. Most people go there. What's the reason? How come? Well, because the sixth and seventh subworlds, where energy is dominated by sixth ray energy and seventh ray energy, and also by the corresponding senses, is relatively selfish and dark, and it's, on an average, more selfish than human beings are while they're physically alive. Yeah, really true. And this is important to understand. While these people are using only single senses, which puts them into a primitive category, they do, some of them gain a little more consciousness than while they were physically alive. Some. There's also a place called the eighth sphere, which is below the seventh subworld in terms of consciousness, but it's still part of it. It's been carved out of the seventh subworld by evil. And their time dilation and everything is half of what the rest of the seven subworld is like. Seven subworld in general is around six times. But the evil folks have gotten down to three. And you say, well, why would they want to live less time? You know, because it puts them closer to the physical world, and that's the door they need to expand their evil. They really can't expand evil well enough in just the astral world alone, because people are too conscious when you get to the higher subworlds. It just won't fly. But so what they want to do is create evil in the physical world, where we are, right? And then those people graduate into the astral world, and they go right to the eighth sphere, and then they're securely locked into the evil energies. That's the easiest way for evil to grow. And so the door to evil is from the astral world into the physical world. And it actually starts and comes through the electromagnetic or etheric part of our world. Interesting. Very interesting. Okay. So, now we look at what does it mean, fifth and fourth and third? What does that mean? Well, the fifth subworld is mostly affected by the type of energy that's in the Ajna Center. And it's fifth-ray energy. What is this energy like? Well, it's energy that stimulates or reinforces lower mental thinking, and it has a lot to do with what a lot of people call science, math, and things like that. It also has in itself a desire for discovery. It can be inventive. It has a lot of interesting qualities in terms of the way it stimulates people. It is also just one of the seven types of energy that come from God. I mean, it's just a part of God. Now, why is it so distinct? Because in the physical world, we don't have subworlds of different energies. They're all kind of squished together, right? The reason is that when you start decreasing the density you increase the heterogeneous aspect. The energy finds itself separating itself out more rather than being crunched together like it is here. It finds a way to separate itself more, and you get more definitive kinds of energies. Now, there are subcategories of fifth-ray energy that are all the different kinds of energy. So you still have nuances of all seven kinds of energy in each one of these subworlds. But they're dominated by the ray type of energy that the subworld is named after in terms of numerical value. Fifth ray energy, fifth subworld. Got it? And so people that respond to this energy the most oftentimes have lived while they were physically alive using both their creative imagination and lower mental thought together to live their lives in ways in which they usually more often than not try to find out what is somewhat the truth and live by a code, usually, a code of, we'll call it ethics, truth, maybe a code of religious beliefs. And they think that these models of formula or code represent the highest level of thinking. And so they live their lives pretty much by that. And there's a large segment of the population in some of the more developed countries that live this way. I'm obviously speaking from the United States, and here we have a large number of people who actually do think that way. Some of those people end up going to the fifth subworld. Interestingly, some of them, because they raise their consciousness beyond that level when they die, because automatically you get an elevation in consciousness, end up in the next subworld, which is called the fourth. So you could kind of start off being like the average fifth ray type energy person who would end up in the fifth subworld. But you can end up really going to the fourth, because if you're kind of on the cusp, we're getting close to that, you can elevate your consciousness and respond to an elevation enough so that when you get to the fourth, when you get to the astral plane, you go to the fourth subworld, because your ability to use your senses determines what subworld you're going to live in. And once you get to that subworld, you could actually change subworlds. If you increase your consciousness more, you can go to a higher one. Or you can visit a lower one, if you choose to, at your peril. Because if you go down lower than where you're at, your consciousness may drop to the level of the residents there, and then you may not be able to move up back where you came from for a while, if or not forever, depending upon where your consciousness remains. So, that being the case, people who go to the fifth subworld sometimes might have almost gone to the sixth, or may have gone to the sixth, but again, they just barely made it to the fifth because their consciousness raised. Now, people in the sixth subworld are very emotional and affected and live their lives more by how they felt than how they thought at all, and they don't challenge their world by trying to find truth. They challenge their world by trying to find comfort and excitement and good feelings and whatever their desires of feeling are. So if they say, yeah, I want to live my life for sex, they'll end up in the sixth subworld because that's where their focus of consciousness has been. Okay, so that's a whole other group of people than what we're talking about right now, and they are a smaller group of people than those who live in the fifth, the fourth, or the third subworlds. Okay, so the fifth is kind of an interesting place. It's a fairly big place. It's in terms of surroundings, it's a little bigger than Earth in terms of the amount of quote-unquote three-dimensional kind of space somebody could occupy. Also, it's more complex in its dimensionality, so it's hard to compare the dimensions of the fifth subworld to Earth itself, but it's a big place still. And it's also big because there's lower populations in it than there were while a person's physically alive, because on Earth, people are all squished together in pretty much one dimension. It's called the fifth. Are you ready for this? The fifth dimension, more or less, from the top, if you want to look at it from that standpoint, from the etheric part. We are living in what is considered by many the air part of the solid dimension of our world. And that may confuse you, but anyway, we live in air, even though we have water around us and we have dense rock around us. The dense rock is the lowest part of our dimensional sphere. Water is the next, and the air. And actually, we kind of live in the air. We're air kind of people. And so that makes us more a fifth-type raid. And that's why people sometimes have a propensity to becoming very fifth-rate oriented anyway. They use their Agile centers a lot when they're living, while they're living in the physical world. Now you can say, okay, well, so you end up going to this fifth subworld. What's that like? Well, I'm going to tell you. But first we're going to go to a break because we're at that time. So we will be back in about 2 minutes and 30 seconds from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. McFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about afterlife after death for most people. And in the first section, I went through some of the science of the situation. I'll sprinkle a little bit more in here and there. I kind of cut it off early because I know it can be tedious for folks. But in addition, we were starting to touch on some examples and get into what the life is really like. So let's continue on. Now, you notice that in the first part, I mentioned that people are far more creative. It's easier to create. And one of the things I didn't mention in the more complex terms is because energy is so much more affected by thought, because this thing called the indefiniteness of energy or the quantum constant is in effect. It's very large, thousands of times greater than it is in our world here. So when energy is molded or created easily by thought, of a person, and that thought is now creative imagination. We're not talking about mental thought, it's about creative imagination. Then that energy is going to form the image that a person has in their astral mind of what it is they want to make, and the energy is going to naturally move and become whatever they want it to become. Wow, tell me that ain't cool. And it takes less thought and less sense to get energy to move in the fifth astral subworld than the sixth or seventh. So people can enjoy being more creative with more ease without using up their senses or their brains as much. And their life becomes a lot easier in general. And in comparison to while we live here, we can't make things by just thinking about it here. We have to go and physically change the energy, which is tremendous amounts of effort compared to what it takes in the astral world. You can see how different life would be based upon just that fact alone. It's huge. Okay, so that is something to consider here when we're talking about, whoa, we're going to the fifth subworld, what's life going to be like there? Well, the first thing is life's going to be a heck of a lot more interesting for some people and easier. They may miss something. So they may miss the physical sense of things. The physical sense is gone because there's no physical energy. And physical things have more definiteness and more tenacity. They don't go away as easily. If somebody else around is creatively imagining something different, they don't just dissolve into what they're thinking about. And in addition, physical things have a toughness to them that is resilient to the forces around them, much greater than astral things are. You know, sometimes this doesn't matter, but in other cases it might. Also, physical things give us the opportunity to master the greatest, most difficult place to live, greatest in being, the place where God needs the most growth and where we can do the most good in growing God. So you lose some of that opportunity because you're going to the astral world where things are so much easier but less dense, and they don't have this depth of creation that makes God a expression on the most slowest formed, most resistant parts of existence. That's the physical world. You've already left there. You're going on to the astral world. Life gets easier, but you've lost the opportunity to be the most creative in some sense, because here in the physical world, you've got to deal with some real tough issues. Those issues are pretty much gone. A lot of people are going to say, that's okay. I don't mind. Let me go to the afterworld. I don't mind. Let go of all the tough things. Yeah, you think that way now. But when you get there, you kind of miss some of the things here. Also, things like the sense of taste of things is reduced. All the kinds of things that have to do with some of the densities of stuff is reduced to some extent. You don't even have to eat in the astral world, although a lot of people in the fifth subworld do continue to eat for some of their life. And you might say, well, what's that like? Well, it's kind of like eating here, except not as distinctly dense in the food texture, the food taste, everything is somewhat lessened to some extent, but the feeling of eating certain is much greater, because most people don't feel a certain way when they eat something as much as they do in the astral world. So it's kind of like one thing is stronger, but another thing is less. Same is true of sex. Let's talk about that. The sex in the physical world is very, very definitive. You can strongly sense the physical feeling of sex while you're physically alive. But the emotional feelings are very vague and subtle. It's just a reverse in the astral world. There is no real physical sex. And what kind of sensation there is of contact with another human being or with whatever you're contacting is lessened in terms of the direct contact, but the emotional contact is incredibly greater. As a matter of fact, you can feel directly the other person's feelings and vice versa. And that, for most people, actually, it improves the sexual experience rather than to decrease it. Now, does that mean that everybody prefers astral sex to physical? No. It just means that when people go to the astral world, they find the substitution of these other qualities more than satisfying in most cases, and especially for the people who go to the fifth and higher subworlds. Because in those worlds, they appreciate, they become more sensitive to this more delicate but more emotional relationship with another person through sexuality. In the lower astral subworld, that's not so true, and because the physical is missing, they oftentimes hanker after, try to find some way to get more of a physical kind of sensation. That's a whole different subject. But in the fifth and higher, not so much so. Okay, so let's say that we're going to go on an imaginary journey here. We're going to go and say we all die. We're going to the fifth subworld. Okay, I can do that. Upon arriving in the fifth subworld, and the first thing we discover is we can float. We can first float and easily move about floating so we can fly. We don't necessarily do that all the time. It's kind of neat that just by our thinking about it, we can do it. We can also sense our surroundings. Almost anything that is there can be felt. You can even feel what a rock feels like, or I should say the astral replication of a rock, and what plants feel like, what they're feeling, and what animals are feeling. Tell me that isn't cool. And you can also feel what other people are feeling directly and in a very, very sensitive way. And you could say, well, this is just the fifth subworld. How is it different in the fourth and third? We're going to get there. But for right now, let's define it so we have a pretty good understanding. Most of what we feel in a secondary way in the fifth subworld. Instead of feeling something and understanding that feeling, we feel it and then we imagine in our creative imagination, as much as we feel it, we imagine it as well, what it is feeling like or what someone is feeling like. So it kind of goes through a secondary process using the Osman Center because the fifth subworld is not as pure in the way that it responds to astral energy. Inside a person's senses as it would be in the fourth or third subworlds or higher subworlds in the astral world. And part of the reason for this is that the senses are very separated. We're using the Ajna Center far too much, so we constantly resort to our creative imagination to try to understand a lot of things around us. And that's the propensity is there because that's how we lived our lives. Well, we were physically alive, we just didn't realize it. And the thing called the common monastic connection is kind of like a plague of humanity. It kind of controls our thinking. We tend, before we figure out things logically, we tend to first decide how we feel about it and whether we like it or not. And so that then colors our logic and makes us think in certain ways that aren't necessarily the truth. So, like, desiring the truth to be a certain way instead of figuring it out. And that's what a lot of people do in the fifth subworld, much too much of the time, actually. So it isn't a panacea. A lot of people think it's heaven when they get there because anything they desire, they get. And let's face it, for a lot of folks, that's pretty close to heaven, right? Right? Okay. Then in addition to that, the natural propensity has been during their whole physical life to tend to move in that direction of thought. They a lot of times didn't think things through. They desired things to be a certain way, and that colored the way that they logically thought of stuff so that they weren't being truthful in their thought. And that's the way people who are living in this fifth astral subworld continue to function. They still are more conscious and more loving than they were while they were physically alive. So the energy is directed a bit more of the time away from themselves than towards themselves, but it's a pretty even ratio. It's close to being even. And you might say, well, even sounds good. Well, yeah, if you want to be selfish a little over half the time, and unselfish a little less than half the time, yeah, I guess that's okay. But we could do better. Humanity does better at times, but people in the fifth subworld, on an average, don't. They're much more like each other. One of the things that's remarkable and almost immediately noticeable when you get to the fifth astral subworld is that people are pretty very much alike. You know, they almost seem like they're cookie cutters of each other. And the homogeneity is scary. It's heterogenic between subworlds tremendously, but among each subworld, it's extremely homogenetic, meaning that it's all the same. And there's not that much difference in the way that people are. There is differences in the way that they react to who and what they are. Some people react to this kind of illusionary life by seeking to be just like everybody else and wanting to have their heaven to be very consistent, no great surprises, nothing that upsets the apple cart, kind of like, well, old yawn, just the same old, same old. Now, they do create things, and they do invent some things, but it's all done together. It isn't done like, well, each person's doing pretty much their own thing. Now, they do a lot of things collectively as groups, and they live kind of in communities where everyone has a solid understanding of exactly the kind of way they want to live, and it's where they're living. So you're kind of living around mirror images of yourself to some extent, yawn, and not much in the way of making you have to struggle, because other people are just like you. Isn't that wonderful? Some people want that. They want it desperately. They live their life desiring that, so that's where they go when they die. And they are fifth subworlders for sure. And you can say, well, what about the folks who want to live free and be different than everybody else? But actually, there's sections of the fifth subworld that have those folks living in them too. And they're all living together still, but they're doing their own thing. And you could say, well, isn't that contrary to what I just said? Not exactly, no. You see, they're still like each other. They just don't want to be like the folks that are all the same. They want to be like folks that are all different. Everybody is kind of a little bit kooky. Got it? Okay. Everybody's doing like their own kind of thing. They have a much less organized way of life. And the disorganization plays into their desire for freedom. But they don't really care about anybody else's freedom. They only want freedom for themselves. And they care very little about anybody living outside their own community. So there's a lot of negative things about that side of the fifth subworld. And the people who are most conscious in the fifth subworld sometimes are the older folks, because they've come to realize that love, genuine love, is more important than your desires. Their creativity is down some because their creative imagination has been worn out through being selfish, and their senses are many times significantly less from being selfish. And so they live together, and they seek really to live a more spiritual life. Some of them actually move on before they die to the fourth subworld, which we're going to cover in a few minutes. But it's important to realize that these folks, even though they're more conscious, still live within the fears that they have. And what are those fears? That anything considerably different from what they presently are living will possibly be destructive to their lives. So they kind of fear things that are very different. Oddly, that's a common denominator between all the three kinds of groups that I named at large who live in the fifth subworld. So people who seek freedom from themselves, they're afraid of too many other people having freedom because they think it's going to take away from their freedom. And at the same time, in a weird, weird way, they don't care about anyone else being free other than themselves, which doesn't make any sense. And they don't care about being creative in any ways different from what they like and desire for themselves. So that challenges them in ways that they don't want. Strange place, huh? Older folks start realizing that this isn't the best way to live, but they may not have enough time and enough sense left to make the necessary changes to grow beyond this kind of life. It's a certain kind of life, a very fixed kind of life. The fifth subworld is in some parts run by groups of people who literally police others. And the others are in agreement with it. They couldn't live without the thought police, the actual creative thinking thought police, who don't let others even imagine certain things in ways that are harmful for what they believe to their way of life. Now, how do they stop someone from doing that? Well, they collectively move around in groups of, like, 8 or 10 or more people, and they'll surround someone and literally stop them from imagining things that are destroying the objects and forms that people have around them, or that in some way are interfering with others being able to go about their lives in relatively copacetic ways. And those people exist within towns and cities created by the majority of the fifth subworld inhabitants. But there are still places, because it's such a huge place, that you can know that they don't exist at all. Like in the more free places, those people would never tolerate and can't exist for them. Any kind of policing activities or things like that. And so they just live off on their own and do their own thing. The astral world gives you that opportunity, unlike the physical world, where it's hard to find almost any place to go anymore to be truly free, if you want to call freedom the ability to do what you desire whenever you want to. So desires are curbed for a lot of people in the fifth subworld. They're curbed by astral police. They're curbed by norms and codes and laws and agreements and all kinds of other issues. When people go to the astral world, they oftentimes continue to grow through education, and they continue to grow through experimentation, and they continue to grow through finding new relationships with people. Not that different from here, except they live a lot longer, and they have much better ways of communicating with people, although ours are somewhat improving with the internet now, but theirs is much more instantaneous and more more persistently correct in terms of saying, well, I want to be with someone like this, and you put that signal out, and a lot of people know who you are, you know who they are, without having to make secondary analysis as you would if you were trying to do something like that on the internet. But we're getting closer. You notice how the two worlds are getting closer, the astral and the physical, through the etheric or electromagnetic world. That's what we call computers and the internet. You see that there's a bridge going on. Kind of an interesting idea, isn't it? I think it's anyway. What else? Well, the fifth subworld is really a fascinating place to visit because it brings to attention how much we have rigidity and desire to have fixed kinds of living styles and rules and laws around us. We're not just not comfortable because of our own fears of being truly free, being truly loving. We prefer this kind of contrived world, which is just an extension of all the contrivances and all the fears we have while we're physically alive, but on steroids. Way on steroids. Okay, so you can say, well, what else? Well, in the fifth subworld, just like here, people have families. It's a little different because you can't have a child that is born to you. You can only have a child who dies from the physical world who you adopt. And those children are children who have consciousness that are commensurate with the consciousness that's average for the fifth subworld. When they arrive in the fifth subworld, in the more defined areas, the ones that have rules, et cetera, they actually have groups of people who collect them and then who create an adoption procedure for families living in the more, we'll say, codified areas of the astral world, the fifth astral world. But The people who don't want to live in those codified areas get children attracted to their communities because those children don't want to go through any adoption process. They don't want the security, quote-unquote, of rules of regulations. They want to kind of meet and greet a bunch of people who are free and decide in a mutual way who they want to be adopted by and from and to. You see how that works? That's pretty cool. And it goes in both directions. So we shouldn't think that, oh, it's more this way or that way. You know, it's pretty much whatever people feel at that time from the area that they died from. Some people really, some children really, want to be guided, and they don't want to be just thrown in to a community of free-loving hippie kind of thinkers who are doing their thing. And that would be terrifying to them. And they don't ever experience that because that's, remember, you're going to the place you desire. And that's not what they desire. The world around them is being formed by their own desires. Okay, what about animals? Well, pets go in the same way. And they end up in the astral world based upon the consciousness of their owners and how they responded in like kind back while they were physically alive. And they will find or be found the home that they need to be going to. If they're going to a more structured community, they'll be literally scooped up by various people who do that sort of thing. And they work in a governmental, rule-oriented sort of way. And then families that are in desire of a pet are adopted out to. No, just like humans, nothing can be born in the astral world. Not dogs, or cats, you name it. Nothing. Everything comes from the physical. Nothing can be born there. So it's a kind of interesting thing, isn't it? Okay, so the same is true of animals that are more free-loving and do seek not to be in any way couched or helped by any human hand. They may naturally look for someone to adopt for themselves, try to decide for themselves. And that's usually in the community that doesn't work under codes and rules and laws as much. You see how that works. Fascinating, isn't it? Okay, what about other kinds of factors? What about when you go there and you want to see family and friends? Well, for a lot of people who go to the fifth subworld, they had family and friends that had consciousness commensurate with that subworld. So those people, if they departed first, they'll find them there. The only difference is that they've been there for a while. And a year here could be 12 years. Let me get this right. Could be 12 years there. And so even if it was only a year difference, 12 years is a long time for someone to have lived in the astral world. Oftentimes, they'll find each other without much problem. People can immediately sense when loved ones arrive, and they almost never just leave them there. In the fifth subworld, they go and meet them. And there is a group who goes in the more structured parts, who goes and meets people who, for one reason or another, are expecting a relative, but that relative has moved on. It's possible. They either had a very short astral life, or they're just not living in that dimension, or they, for one reason or another, are not available. And so they'll go and meet them first. And usually they'll try to find a friend, even if it's a distant one, because people feel most comfortable when they see somebody they know. And everybody knows that. So they try to do something about that. And in the more free-loving areas, this is not necessarily going to happen, and you don't always find someone who's going to be an old friend there. But maybe you will, and that's good. And if you don't, those people are just naturally going to realize that if you're in their neck of the woods, you're a free-loving person yourself, and maybe you don't have any friends or relatives that are going to meet you, but they're going to go meet you just as if they were your friend or relative. So it doesn't matter. And that's a pretty cool thing. That works out just well for those folks because that's what they desire. Again, you're getting your desires met in this strange place we call the astral world. And for most people, the adjustment is in terms of months of astral time, which isn't that long in the physical world, but it's still months there, and to adjust to the different kinds of lifestyles what they and who where they want to be, who they want to be with, that sort of thing. People who were very close and lovers, and are married or living as partners together, oftentimes find each other if they died within a year or two in physical time of each other. If it's 10 years, that could be a problem. They may still be met by their prior lover, but the problem is that, that person may have moved on and may be with someone else in the astral, because they've been there, if it's 10 years, they've been there 120. And you can imagine that that's usually not going to just work out too well. And they'll oftentimes bring along someone who's not attached. They'll say, "Oh, I'm married. This is my now new husband or old husband. We've been married 60 years in our time here. So you can imagine that we're together. But here's somebody who's a good friend of mine, and I wanted to meet them because they don't have anyone right now. They may have arrived only a short time ago, and we'd like you to think of them as your friend right now." And so that sort of thing does happen. I mean, talking about getting computer dating, this is getting astral dating. You know, you're getting set up literally because people can sense how you feel very strongly, and they can match people to you better than you can do on, you know, whatever dating site you're going to these days by taking 22 questions or something. Is that going to nowhere near going to be as good as what the astral world is like? Well, at any point, I think I could keep going on and on, but I'll give you a little bit of a break. I want to tell you a little bit more about the fifth subworld, and then we'll go on to the fourth and the third. We'll finish before the end of the show today. I'm just going to tell you that I was over at Healthy Habits Health Food Store over on 7th Avenue in Bethany Home. I did a live show. I'm going to be doing a workshop there in about a month. So if you're in the Phoenix area, plan for it because it's coming. It's going to be at the end of this month, April. And I'm going to be talking about, you know, some of the characteristics of herbal medicine and how it fits in with metaphysics and spirituality and how we can remain healthy. Basically, is one of the things I'm going to be getting into. And it's a free workshop. You can come to it. We expect about I think they have room for about 50 people. We think there's actually going to be that many there. And you don't have to make a reservation, but it would help if you're going to plan on coming so we can see how much seating we have available. There's always options. If it looks like it's going to be too many people, we can move somewhere else or something. There's some options, I think, available. But the important thing is that we're going to be there. And one of the people, I'm a member of a spiritual group, and one of the people in that group, Mimi, has been going to that store about every week or two and talking to people who just walk around the store about some of the things we're doing and about health in general. You can go there. She's going to be there tomorrow. She's usually there on every other Saturday or so. So you can look for her tomorrow. And the thing that impresses me about this particular location in the store is how many products they have. I've never seen a health food store with the variety of products that these folks have. They've got everything, and they have, right now, they're carrying 5-T Gzik. A lot of people finding it's helpful. There was the manager of the store, I won't mention any names, but she tried some 5-T Gzik while I was there on Wednesday, a couple days ago. After my show, the radio show, she was helping out on the show. She's an assistant on the show as well. And after the show, she had gone to the doctor, I guess earlier that day or the day before, and had some ear kind of things gone, procedure done on her, and her ear was hurt. And among that, other things that she had, some aches and pains. And so she tried some 5-T Gzik. At first, she was a little, you know, she said, "I don't know, I don't take too many of our products from the store, but I'll try yours." And about 15 or 20 minutes later, I'm not kidding you, she said, "Oh, my stuff's working. I can't believe it." And her pain was gone, or going away at that point, and within a half hour, it was literally gone. That's fast for Gzik. It's anywhere from for most people, 30 minutes to an hour and it's gone. But it can hit you as much as 10 or 15 minutes after you take it. So that's great. It was wonderful. So she had a great experience. And actually, overall, the whole time I was there, it was a wonderful experience. So if you are interested in anything like that, I want you to consider stopping by. If you're in the general Phoenix area, this is in Phoenix proper, at 7th, let me get this right there. It's 7th Avenue and Bethany Home. That's where we're talking about going to. And, Seventh Street. Oh, Seventh Street.
Healthy Habit.
Okay. Healthy Habit. Okay, I'm getting told here. I don't know if anybody can hear that, but I can hear it. Healthy Habit. It's on 7th Street and Bethany Home. And I said Healthy Habits, didn't I? I made it put an S on the end of it. Okay. So I'm not sure who that was. Was that Seth say that? Somebody was saying that. So the important thing is that if you're in the area, drop by. And if you have plans to be in Phoenix, put it on your schedule. Come by, because I'd love to see you there. All right, let me go back now to what I was saying about the astral world, because we're kind of already, the time is just flying by for us. And that is that when someone is in the fifth sub-world, they have the opportunity to leave there. If they find that their consciousness is very giving, by just natural ability, they can actually astral travel, that's what it's called, to the fourth sub-world, or even higher, but that's a really hard thing to do, by using more of their astral senses together. You have to use three instead of just the Ajna Center. And you can actually leave temporarily or permanently and go to the fourth astral subworld. Now, if you try to go there and you don't have enough sense, you'll just fall asleep. So you won't even remember either that you did it, or you'll kind of be there for a few seconds or a minute and just go right back to the fourth, fifth subworld. But once you get to the fourth subworld, it's a really kind of different situation, because that place is not just a little bit more conscious. The differences are so much greater than you would expect there being, at least juxtaposed in terms of numerical energy. But it's a lot more complicated, because the energy is considerably more, we'll say, responsive to the thought of the inhabitants. And that means the quantum constant is higher, and sure enough, instead of being 12 times dilation of time, it's 15, approximately. These are approximate numbers. And beyond that, people live differently. The fears that are imposed on people's lives who go to the fifth subworld are much less prevalent in the fourth. People are somewhat afraid, but they're more afraid about how they look to other people than they are about the kinds of fears that we in the physical world still have, and those in the fifth subworld sometimes carry with them. They're less concerned about being independent and about they don't need others to tell them what to do or how to do it, and they don't need to be working collectively together in order to feel okay about themselves. This is a big change, really. There's a much greater level, therefore, of creativity and independent thought, and people are not afraid or concerned about being different from those around them, and there's more intelligent and mental thinking joined with their creative imagination. Common monastic connection is weaker. They don't just think mentally based upon what they desire. They challenge their own desires at times, breaking through some of their egotism at the same time with their mental thought. And they do this regularly. They have discussions with other people and aren't afraid for other people to disagree with them. And they'd be different from them. That's way different from the physical world. People there very challenged by anybody being different from themselves. So it's a significant improvement, in my opinion, but it's different. And I don't know if it's an improvement for all people, because some people don't desire that. That's the reason they don't end up in there. Love is more abundant. More often than not, energy is directed by love rather than selfishness. The reverse is true in the fifth subroad. And so you find once the scales are tipped, you can notice the difference much more readily. And it's a place of great wonder because beauty is the hallmark of what people are attempting to express, at least in astral forms. Sometimes not in their behaviors as much as in their forms. But at least that's a step ahead of the fifth subworld where the sameness and consistency of form is more important than beauty. Whereas in the fourth subworld, beauty becomes the hallmark. Consistency is considered to some extent ugly, and repetition almost is non-existent. So you have what I would call fatigue or boredom. And life expectancy is longer because, again, with this time dilation model, you're getting like 25% more life expectancy. And that's a significant amount. So people are living very long periods of time now. And they oftentimes have, for good or bad, more than one life kind of experience. They may stay for 50 or 100 years doing something that is really important to them, and then move on. Unfortunately, that's sometimes true with relationships. Not all marriages are kept monogamously for this book. That's even true in the fifth subworld, but it's especially true in the fourth. And so people can have several different spouses. Not too often, though, that they have polygamous relationships. Monogamy is much more consistent, whereas in the fifth subworld, you find people still having clandestine infidelities. Not quite the same in the fourth. The fourth, more often than not, people don't try to hide it. It's hard to hide these things anyway in the astral world. People know how you feel. It's very difficult to hide anything. Now, if you do, you pay a great penalty because you have to use a lot of sense and your own imagination to keep people to, quote-unquote, not find out what you're up to. Now, in the fourth subworld, people just don't waste their time doing that. They are what they are, and they kind of live with that. They're less fearful about their own decisions in life, and they're willing to own them and live them as whatever way they are. That doesn't mean they're all like that and they do it perfectly, but they do it more often than you'll find anywhere below that subworld. The fourth subworld has tremendous beauty in it because the people thrive on trying to make things very creatively beautiful all the time. They're really developing it. And it's a major thing. It's a really major thing that they're developing. Because beauty is something that we strive for in the physical world, but it seldom is achieved. Very little that humans create is beautiful. When we talk about beauty in this world, in the physical world, it's oftentimes something that God and other creatures created, not what we did, if you think about it. So this is a totally different experience, isn't it? I mean, the fifth subworld, you could almost say, well, you can go to a lot of communities and you can look at those and you can kind of see some similarities. Fourth subworld, not so much so. It's really kind of a very different place. You turn a corner, you don't know what you're going to find. It's going to be something oftentimes beautiful, very creative, but like nothing you've ever seen or experienced before. Now, if that's the kind of world you desire, there's more chance you're going to end up there. So that's a great thing. You have to desire it without fear, though. So some people tell me things like, oh, well, Niles, I desire that. Yeah. And I say, well, how come you aren't doing it now if you desire it? Well, I also have these problems, these fears that this or that may come about, and I may not be able to handle this, or may not be able to do that, may not be able to live with people like this. And then, well, that's exactly what's going to happen, minus some fear and with a little increased consciousness, when you get to the astral world. So the chances are that unless you live somewhat that way while you're physically alive, you're not going to be able to make it in the astral world. Again, there's some leeway, there's some grace. You get some benefits by dying and having lived in the physical world, but it isn't enough to make up for a huge difference. It only make up for a minor amount. So the people that are living there you have to live fairly fear-free while they're being amazingly creative, amazingly different from each other, and sometimes breaking relationships that they've had for a while to move on to newer ones and are growth-inspiring. More of these people move to the third or second subworld to live than proportionately just about anyone else, because it's their nature to want to make some improvements in themselves. They really strive for that purpose. And a lot of times they actually jump all the way from the fourth subworld to the second, bypassing the third altogether. That's a huge change. The reason they do that is they really want to live a spiritual life, and that's where you can, is in the second subworld. But even though many try, only a few make it. But even the few that make it, it's pretty remarkable to be able to do that, because that's a huge change from their level of consciousness in a normative way, having lived or while they're living in the fourth subworld. Pretty interesting stuff. Now, what else is unique or different about the fourth subworld? Well, it's a place where sometimes people are great hypocrites because they want to impress other people and they want to look more like they're conscious and spiritual beings and everything else than they actually are. You can say, well, why do they do that? Don't they realize that's not a good thing? Sometimes they do, but they can't help themselves. They don't want others to recognize that they still have this selfish side. And they'll spend a lot of time trying to hide it. One thing that people can do is change the way they appear in the astral world, both in age and actually in their overall features. And in the fourth subworld, there's a tendency to look younger and much, much more handsome or beautiful than people sometimes are. And they can spend a lot of their senses and creative imagination on just that one thing. When they do that, they reduce their lives. They don't increase them. But they do it because they have this tremendous urge to, in the eyes of others, look better than they are. That's not a good thing. And it's kind of a disgusting thing if you visit there, because it's one of the things that's unfortunately obvious to others, in my opinion. Especially if you're not native to the area. Now, if you're doing some of it yourself, you don't notice that others are doing it. So I guess birds of a feather do flock together, at least in the fourth subworld. But they aren't flocking together because of the same. They're flocking together to be creatively different and to hide and mask their selfishness. Oh, well, okay. Some people find that's worthwhile. What else? You're getting to the more positive side. Well, these people are very loving. There's no question about it. Children, when they arrive there, they are treated amazingly well. Children that can make it to the fourth subworld because their consciousness is and their desires are commensurate with some of the fourth subplane energy. They can process this energy and therefore find people that match themselves amazingly well. Parents and their children in the fourth subworld are so well matched together, you would swear that they must be naturally connected, but they're not necessarily. They aren't at all, unless they came together from the physical world. They died practically at the same time. That's rare, by the way. So the situation is that they truly are adopted, but you would never know that, because they just seem so well suited to each other and amazingly happy and amazingly loving. The love between parents and children in the fourth subworld is profound. And it's, if anything, it's worth a trip there for that one experience, because it's really, really something else. That model for parenting that is exemplified is so wonderful that let me describe it for you for a few minutes, because I think it really gives us something to maybe look forward to in this world if we can straighten out some of our craziness here. First of all, let's talk about schools. They have schools, yes. And both adults and children attend schools, and sometimes together. Now, this is going to be strange for you, because I know a lot of you don't quite grasp this concept. But they actually attend school together because part of their experience is for the parents to also aid in the teaching, and for the children to find unique ways in which to relate to their parents, different than we are familiar with here. They don't see their parents just as someone to protect them and to provide, etc. They see their parents as an expression of their own future. And they want to explore their future through how their parents explore their own nature within an academic, if you can call it that. It's not quite like that. Environment. And so they enjoy the growth of their parents while the parents enjoy the growth of their children together. Now, they're not learning the same things, granted, but they are studying things that have interrelationship, and they look for those, and they find them. So that's one of the things that I found remarkable. And then if you go even deeper into this process of the parents and the children relationship, parent-child relationship, the children almost always are given incredible, we'll call it freedom. You know, the idea, well, you can't do this, you can't do that, very seldom ever enters into the picture. There's virtually no concern for life or death because astral death is almost impossible to achieve except through destroying one's senses. And there are so many areas of the fourth subworld to explore and to understand. It's like an infinitely huge place. It's the largest of all the subworlds. I didn't mention that. I should have. It's just an incredible place. More people go there than any other subworld. But its size is actually greater than the ratio of people. So there's just an amazing array of places to go where you wouldn't necessarily be around people if you didn't want to be. And the other thing that's incredible about the relationship between children and we'll call it adults and family, is that children relate to all adults in some way looking for some growth. So it isn't just they don't just do this with their parents, they do it with all adults. And now there's none of the crazy things that happen between adults and children in terrible ways that we have to fear so much in this world. That doesn't exist in the fourth subworld. It mostly exists in the sixth and seventh, which we haven't really and won't discuss in today's show. So this is a tremendous advantage for the kids. They have much more opportunity for growth, and they do grow faster. In the fifth subworld, children don't grow up as fast. They can take a lot more time because they aren't really challenged to grow faster. And without the challenges of life, they are kind of meandering along. That's changed in the fourth, because instead of being challenged by stresses and, we'll say, various kinds of negative issues, they're challenged by the wonderful things of positive growth and love, and by wanting to experience some of the elements of adult life while they're children, without giving up being children. And you can have your cake and eat it that way there. You can't do it here in the physical world because of various restrictions and just physical kinds of restrictions. And you can't do it in the fifth subworld because people's consciousness is too low. But the fourth provides the perfect formula for this kind of experience, and it's truly remarkable. Let's talk about relationships between people in various ways. Friends, sometimes are friends for hundreds and hundreds of years. Very close friendships are formed that may lead to eventually soul-like relationships in the monastic development of the people later on when they die from the astral world. But in addition to that, there's a kind of closeness of all people, regardless of whether they seemingly know each other in any close or intimate way. And there's this sense of community without there being redundantness or the sense of having to do something the way everybody else does it, as happens in the fifth world. All that's gone. Yet there's much, much closer relationship between all people. And people are willing to give amazingly in almost every circumstance to others. And they look for the opportunity to do so, to actually enjoy that part of life far more than people in the fifth sub-world do. It's almost like one of the main things that they're looking to do is be able to give to others and help provide some means of growth for their fellow fourth sub-world people. Wow. Some people, by the way, don't say sub-world. They'll call it heaven. This is the fourth heaven. It could be the third heaven. Depends on how they count from bottom up, top, bottom, down. Some people have different relationship to heaven if they believe in heaven. And they think they're in some kind of heaven. Many of them, though, know about other sub-worlds, so they know that they can't be quite like heaven normally would be construed. Okay, so, there's so much to say about that, but I better go on to the third sub-world, and then we can come back and maybe talk a little more about the fourth if there's time, and I can compare it to the third. So, some people leave the fourth sub-world and actually go to the third sub-world. They're the minority, because the third is really very different from the fourth. Yes, the people are more conscious. There's no question about that. Their senses work better. And they live in a time frame that is 18 times approximately dilated from the physical world. So there's a considerable difference in time relationship. People are living longer and longer in comparison as you go to the higher subworlds. The third subworld is mostly dominated by the third ray, but again, there's three centers at once instead of the fourth ray. It's a more masculine kind of world, just the way the fifth is, in the ray energy kind it is. And it has its distinct feel as future. It's a very future-esque type of place. Extremely creative in terms of what we would consider to be astral kinds of technology. And it's a place of a great invention. The people that live there believe themselves to be intellectually super people who have amazing amounts of knowledge about how everything works in the universe, they think. And they also still do and are very spiritual, but their spirituality is related to a scientific basis for their being God. Not too much different from some of the things that I sometimes say, but nonetheless missing other elements, which I'm going to get into. These folks are by and far more conscious than the fourth subworld people, so they tend not to be hypocritical. They aren't trying to oppress each other about who or what they are, because they see right through each other. This is a truly transparent society. Now, some people say, well, that's great. You mean you go there and there's no pretentiousness? Nobody can bullshit anybody about anything? Yeah, that's pretty much true, because the consciousness of the people see right through it. There's no sense in trying. And people are very direct with each other. They have almost a fanaticism of directness about how they feel and what they think to each other. And they believe the truth is what they live by. So they're always looking for truth. They're trying constantly to break with the thing called the Kamanasic connection. They're trying not to live just by their desires. And you might say, well, that's good. Why? What's so bad about that? The problem is that trying and doing it are two different things. While they try not to live by their desires and are well aware of how their desires control themselves and other people, their hypocrisy isn't in trying to impress other people. It's in attempting to be in control of people below their subworld. They are the meddlers. I call them that anyway. And they're meddling not through spiritual principles, but through principles of intellect and what they consider to be logical truths, etc. They think they know better than the folks who live in the fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh subworlds. And so they sometimes invent things and make little trips down to and try to make changes in the lower subworlds because they think they're better. But they are better. I mean, it's not like they're making it up. It's just that they don't have enough humility in recognizing their superior intellect, their superior knowledge, their superior inventiveness and creation, to mitigate that into a state of still accepting that there's many things they don't understand. Their consciousness is not perfect, and there's many things they can be wrong about and oftentimes are. Some of the things they invent later on turn out to not work very well, and sometimes they have counter benefits, especially for folks in lower subworlds. Yet they freely give away these things without realizing the sometimes negative consequences they cause. They also have a tendency to look on people who visit them from the physical world with a great deal of, lacking of humility. They really feel they are superior. And unlike people in the fourth subworld who have humility, even though sometimes it's false, at least they have some humility. People in the third subworld oftentimes are lacking it. That's a sign of people who have gone down the path of learning and gone through the hall of knowledge, it's called, and gained great knowledge, but have not become wise. And truly, these folks sometimes don't have great wisdom with all the knowledge that they have. They have amazing amounts of knowledge. They truly understand things we will not learn here in the physical world for hundreds of years into our future in terms of science. It's the truth. And you would think, well, oh, gee, if we were hundreds of years ahead, we'd be so much better in our spiritual and our this and that. No, it's not necessarily true. Knowledge does not necessarily make us more loving or conscious. It doesn't improve our soul nature. And they are a pure example of this. But nonetheless, they are more conscious overall than anyone living below them. So it's a kind of contradictory thing because they have this fault of lacking wisdom at times, not having humility, but having far more wisdom than people below them. But yet they challenge their wisdom by creating and inventing things that sometimes have, we'll say, devastating negative effects because they are unwilling to see their own weaknesses and that of some other people. This is a contradictory place as far as I'm concerned. I visited there several times in my astral travels, and I still can't claim that I have as full or great a grasp on everything to be told about the place. It's not nearly as big a world because fewer people actually make it there. But the people who go there are usually in a quandary. They want to be more spiritual. They oftentimes are looking for a greater meaning in life than that which comes from knowledge and invention. And they know there's something missing. Yet they're perplexed because they still put knowledge above, we'll say, consciousness. Even though they are very conscious, I don't want you to think they're not. But the growth of consciousness is what's lacking. They don't strive to grow their consciousness as much as people in the fourth subworld, even though they're twice as conscious, about double. Twice the consciousness as people in the fourth subworld. The fourth subworld are continually, on an average, wanting to grow their consciousness more, while the people in the third say, well, it's good enough. Let's get some more knowledge instead. You can see what I'm trying to explain, and it's not easy to quite grasp this because these people have this incredible level of consciousness, but they're not so motivated to gain any more. It's kind of frightening, isn't it? They actually technologically can improve their senses beyond their consciousness, and that's a rare thing. But it doesn't last. It lasts 10, 20 years, 50 years of their time, and then it starts to diminish. Why? Because artificially improving sense without improving consciousness always leads to the consciousness pulling the senses down and being destructive to it. The person ultimately is self-destructive. Not totally, but to the point that they're conscious. Fascinating. And there's another thing I want to mention about the third subworld. This is not going to bode well to some people. They really don't care for the folks that get much lessened in their senses. even though their consciousness may be not too different from them, if their senses are lowered significantly, they want those people to leave their part of the world and go live someplace else in the other part of the third subworld still, but separated from them. And they actually have achieved this result. So, and these are usually the older folks. These folks, sometimes their senses don't work as well. So they may have half the sense and three-fourths of the consciousness of the folks living in the younger elements, younger parts of the world, younger being still several hundred years old. But the point is that they are looking more at the form side, which is the senses, than the consciousness side. And then the people who are older, when they go to these other places to live, because they really find it very difficult to live among and with people who don't want to be with them, and then you also find that the technology sometimes gets beyond their ability to use it. Because the third subworld inhabitants, the younger folks, younger being less than, say, 300 or 400 years old, tend to invent things and create things deliberately that the older folks can't use. So it kind of like separates them out. You know? And the older folks know this and are pissed off. And worse than that, they actually have a barrier that the older folks mostly can't get through if their senses are too low. This is the worst thing about this world. I said it was something I was going to tell you about you wouldn't care for. And you would say, well, holy cow, that doesn't sound very, very loving. What kind of astral place is this? You have to understand both sides, listen to their discussions about why they do what they do. And the older folks actually permit it to happen because they leave voluntarily. And they usually know that they're going to have trouble getting back if they think they can get back at all. At any rate, they do so, but it's a world in which people are in a belief structure that is illusionary. And the illusion is that there's some level of knowledge that will in some way enlighten you to the point where you're godlike. No level of knowledge will ever do that, but that's the illusion these folks live in. And as far as God is concerned, their understanding of God is based upon real factual issues, things that we don't know yet in our science and some of the things I suggest about in the show. And those things, they know them to be true, so they know God really exists. Not, they don't have faith in God. And you could say, well, gee, if they really know God exists, why aren't they more loving? Why aren't they all this? Well, because knowledge is not consciousness. And they won't necessarily let their consciousness grow beyond a certain point because they just want more and more knowledge. They prefer to know that God exists rather than to live as part of God. That's an unfortunate thing. And I'm talking about this on an average. Not everybody is like that. I met some great, great people there who had gotten beyond that. But the average of society is pretty much the way I'm describing it. Good or bad, whether you think it's terrific or not, and I know that some people are saying, well, how could that be something that's really wonderful? Well, it's not my cup of tea, but it is a lot of people's who are great thinkers in our society who have tremendous knowledge and who have lived their lives in ways not too different from what I've just described. No, not to the level they would or will eventually live in this third astral subworld, but still, there's a propensity there. So you find people there that are like that. Now, not everybody is as I describe it. I'm just averaging the thing out so that you got a feel for what it's like. Let me quickly go back and forth between the fourth subworld and the third, and that'll kind of demark these two, and then we'll just kind of close out the show with them. Now, again, the people in the fourth subworld are much, the humility is very important to them, not because they always are genuinely humble, but because they will at least go to the efforts of looking humble, and sometimes that forces them to slowly change to become more humble, because sometimes just the acting actually produces the result. But nonetheless, they're still hypocritical in these lies that they present to other people about their humility levels and their compassion and loving levels, etc. Whereas people in the third level, third subworld do not do that. They are as direct as you can imagine. They never, almost never, try to lie about who they are, because it wouldn't work anyway. Their senses are too good. They will immediately detect it about each other. It would be fruitless. But beyond that, they also are technically more humble than the people in the fourth subworld, but they don't appear to be because they don't pretend to be. And in addition, relative to their level of consciousness, their humility is lacking, because they're twice as conscious and only maybe 5 or 10% more humble. So humility is lacking despite their level of consciousness. And you can say, how is that happening? Well, because consciousness and humility are not directly related. There's all kinds of issues that get in the way of people being humble, including egotism, which falls outside of the realm of just astral development and consciousness. Okay, so, and when we compare the level of knowledge, people in the fourth subworld have very limited relative levels of knowledge, about, again, half or less than the kinds of knowledge that people in the third subworld have. They really don't know that much, even about physics and the way the worlds work and all the things that you might get into if you were actually living there. But the thing is that what they're willing to learn, and they try to keep a balance, because that fourth ray issue is there, between their knowledge and their consciousness, which to me is kind of like a nice thing. I like that. But people in the third subworld let it get really way out of whack because they don't seek that kind of balance. They are more, we'll say, one-sided, and they value the knowledge greater than they value consciousness or humility. It's not that they seek to lose consciousness, because they don't want that, but they would rather be the most knowledgeable person rather than the most conscious on a truly desire level, at the very fundamental, most desire level. That's where they're at. So in comparison between the two subworlds, it's almost a dichotomy. Yet, in absolute numbers, people are more conscious in the third subworld, even though I sometimes like the fourth better, although I can't stand the hypocrisy in a personal sense. So both of them have a lot to say. Now, beyond these subworlds that I just described, there are the two spiritual worlds, which is the second and first subworlds, where people live through their spiritual senses. They join all the other senses in service. They live more of a life of service, and they live a more angelic and loving life than anything I described where most people go to, which is like 75% of our population. And remember that most of the remainder of the people go to the sixth and seventh subworlds. So very few people make it to the second or first, and that's for another show anyway. But I thought I'd let you know that those places exist, so you don't think, well, gee, there's really no place to go after you die that is anyone. Now, if you live a spiritual life while you live here in the physical world, your chances of living a spiritual life in the astral world are very high. But that means you have to live here that way. You not pretend, not say, well, I'm a spiritual person because what? Because I want to be. I don't know. You got to be serving other people and co-serving with God, co-creating virtue and godly ones. If you're doing that, you go on to live in the second or first astral subworld. Even if you go to the fourth, first, sometimes that could happen, or the third, you'll end up going to the second very soon. And that'll be where you mostly live your life. So those are the challenges, and those are the places we're headed for. And where I'm headed for right now is off the air, because we've run out of time. So until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.